Welcome to the Plant Centered and Thriving Podcast. I'm your host, Ashley Kitchens. I'm a plant-based registered dietitian and virtual nutrition mentor. I was raised on an Angus cattle farm, grew up with a lot of GI issues, and used the power of plant-based eating to promote healing. Here you'll find inspiration, ideas, and encouragement for your own plant-based journey. I'm so thrilled you're here today. Let's get started. Welcome to the show, Plant Centered Listener. My name is Ashley, and today I have Toni Okamoto on the show. She is the founder of Plant Based on a Budget. If you have not heard of Plant Based on a Budget yet, highly recommend going and checking her out because she shares such practical tips to living plant based. Guess what? On a budget. And in today's conversation, she shares such practical tips, time saving tips, money-saving tips when it comes to eating plant-based that I truly believe are invaluable. In fact, there are a couple of things that I have personally taken from her, what she has said just over the years to and applied them to my own journey, especially when it comes to meal planning, that have saved me a lot of time and money. So I really appreciate what she has to say. We talk about, like I said, we talk about meal planning. We talk about her unique journey to becoming vegetarian and then vegan and how plant-based on a budget even came about. And at the end, we really talk about how it blew up. She was featured in a documentary, which we share again at the end of the podcast, that really ramped up people's view on plant-based eating, how a lot of people just thought it was a really expensive way of living. And she dismantled that. She just totally busted that myth, which I think is so cool. So Toni, like I said, she is the founder of Plant-Based on a Budget. It's a popular website and meal plan that shows you how to save dough by eating veggies. She's also the author of the Plant-Based on a Budget cookbook and the co-host of the Plant Powered People podcast. Toni's work has been profiled by NPR, NBC News, Parade Magazine, and she's a regular presence on local and national morning shows across the country where she teaches viewers how to break their meat habit without breaking their budget. She was also featured in a popular documentary, which I'm not going to share what that is yet. And when she's not cooking up a plant-based storm in her kitchen, she's spending time with her husband and their rescued dog in Sacramento, California. And we talk about that too, how there are things in our lives, especially as we get older, that we find incredibly, I think the value of those things goes up. And so she talks about how she really does try to spend less time in the kitchen so that she can spend more time with the people that she loves or doing the things that she loves. I appreciate Toni so much. I am so excited for you to listen to our conversation today. So please join me in welcoming Toni to the show. Welcome to the show, Toni. I am so excited to have you here today.
Thank you for having me. I'm really looking forward to our conversation today.
Me too. So you just came back from a like 2-week saga, right? Of like book related stuff, cookbook related stuff.
A little bit of work and a little bit of play. I have the most patient husband in the whole entire world. We got married 4 years ago, and I was coming out with the first plant-based on a budget cookbook at the time. So I asked that we postpone our honeymoon a year, and he said yes. But then okay. The pandemic hit, and then the Delta variant hit. And here we are 4 years later. So we finally, we had some obstacles getting to our destination and had to reroute. And the universe said, we don't want you to go to Belize. So we went to Hawaii and it was a nice time.
Oh my goodness. But yes. Did you have plans to go to Belize?
Yes, we had booked 4 years ago. And with all the things that have happened between then and now, we had to change. And even this last time, we were on our way. We were leaving from San Francisco, which is about an hour and a half from where we are. And our flights were canceled. And the earliest flights that we could get were 3 days, and we only took time off of work for a short period of time. So yeah. There was a big freak storm in Dallas that prevented us from going to Belize.
Yep. Yep. Wow. Oh, so, okay. So you end up getting rerouted to Hawaii. How was it?
Amazing, because I, for the first time, kind of chilled. We decided instead of filling our time with a lot of things to do, we would only pick a couple things. And one of the things was to see whales. And it's whale mating season for humpback whales.
Oh my gosh.
And I'm not joking. I'm going to have to show you a video of this. About 20 feet away, a whale who was 90,000 pounds came up and showed themselves. And it was the most beautiful experience.
Oh
and
my gosh.
This little baby was breaching right next to us. Little meaning a lot of thousands of pounds, but so beautiful. And I was crying and it was just such a special experience. I will always remember it and have a special place in my heart for that trip.
Wow. Yeah. So it sounds like it was meant to be, even though the belief sounds amazing. Yes. It was, you got to experience some really cool things while you were there.
Yes. Especially quality time. I feel like on a day-to-day basis, it's easy to forego quality time with your partner, but carving out some time to connect and hang out together is really special too.
Yeah, that is really special. I feel like even if you work from home, it can be so hard to connect because you're just in your zone, you're doing your thing. Yes. Like, yeah, that's so wonderful.
At my house, we do this thing where we eat dinner together every night. And when the candles are lit on the table, all electronics go off. You cannot have your phone at my table or I will have you eating outside by yourself. So that's something that we do at our house. I don't care if it's my dad or my nephew or friend. Everybody knows that when the candles are lit, the phones are off.
Wow. I think that's a great rule that all of us could actually use. Yeah.
You.
That's wonderful. Was it hard when you went to Hawaii? Was it hard to not fill your time with all the things? Is that like, or is that more of your personality where it's like, it's okay to relax and, or is that more challenging for you?
The thing that is the most challenging is that I really love my job. I don't feel like it's a job. It's something that brings me so much happiness and the connection to my audience is so important to me. And it's it's been 11 years of my life. And so disconnecting from that is impossible. And I, again, have the most patient husband who allowed me to work, not allowed me, but who supported me in working probably a fourth of our awake time. I'm in the middle of a book launch right now, and he understands that it's the most important time for me. And I'm so appreciative. I don't know how I got so lucky.
Yeah. That's so wonderful to have a supportive spouse who supports you in things that really do add value to your life, even if it is part of your job.
Yes, I totally agree. And I feel like it allows me to provide that same support because we are mutually supportive and caring for the other priorities in our life. I know that some people in their relationships, you have your one priority and that's your mate. But in ours, we have so many different things that make us happy. Like for me, I love swing dancing. I love gardening. I love my family, my friend time. Having alone friend time for me is really important. And so all these other things are important. And I'm grateful to have a partner who allows that space in our relationship for each of us to be individuals who have lots of different interests.
Yep. Yeah. I think that is really important. It just makes your marriage just all the more partnership, just all the more joyful.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So I am familiar with your story, Tony, but I definitely want you to share your story with our listeners. You have a very, it's your personal unique journey to going vegetarian and then starting this incredible business that you've created, this incredible presence that you've created online. So I'm curious if you could kind of just take us back to how your plant-based journey sort of came about.
Thank you for the kind words. I started out my life eating a lot of fresh foods. I grew up with my grandparents until I was 11. My dad was a teenager when I was born and he went to the Navy. And my grandpa was a Japanese gardener here in the Central Valley of California. My grandma would cook all of the fresh food that he made. And then after my dad got back, I moved in with him and he lived more of a bachelor life. So we ate a lot of canned chili and hot dogs and the occasional fast food. But it kind of distanced me from my early childhood, and it became my new norm and my new way of eating and thinking about food. And so by the time I got into high school, I was very, very, very into fast food and very into a hamburger helper and quick fixes at home that are more processed, like mac and cheese. And I don't want to knock top ramen because I still like instant ramen noodles, but yes. I ate them every day. And
yeah,
you got to vary it up. So yep. I only thought about food as a way of feeling full and something that tastes good. And when I was struggling as a runner at track practice, my coach suggested that I cut down and not eat so much red meat and not eat so much fast food. And I followed his advice. I began to thrive as a runner and had a really good experience. It was not the easiest thing for me because I was living with my family and they were not on board with my hippy-dippy lifestyle, but I made it work. And all this time later, they are now supportive.
Oh, wow. Wow. So you went from growing up with your grandparents for the first about 11 years to eating a lot of fresh foods, it sounds like. Did you notice a difference? I mean, you were obviously young at that point, but did you notice a difference in just how you felt with shifting over to more fast food?
I don't remember. I don't remember at all. But I do remember already being conscious of my body and how I felt as a late teen. Mm-hmm. And knowing that I felt better as an athlete once I cut back on fast food.
Yeah. Was that challenging at all to kind of be like, oh, wow, I am eating a lot of fast food or red meat or whatever that is? And was it kind of challenging to transition maybe away from that?
It is challenging to be really connected to your cultural foods and to have an understanding of the importance of the cultural foods to your family, and then to say no thank you to something that has red meat in it. And at that time, it was just red meat, but I later became a vegetarian after I moved out of my house around 18, and then I became vegan at 20. So I continued making it a little bit more challenging and more challenging for my family to accept as I continued down the path of veganism. Yeah. I felt really strongly pulled, especially when I learned of the ethical components. But I also feel like I gave grace and I gave patience. And I also did not put up walls between me and my family because of the choices that I was making in my life. And because of those decisions, I think it ultimately led to them trying the food that I was eating, wanting to accommodate me, wanting to learn why I was doing this, making these choices. And I'm grateful for how slow and gradual and long-term everything has gone for me. It was not something that was all or nothing. I'm going to jump in. It was something that I got to really embrace on my own timeline and to think about it forever for me.
So when you originally went vegetarian, was there the idea of like, okay, the next step is veganism? Or did you just do vegetarian without even like thinking about that?
That is true. I did vegetarian because it was easy. I had a friend who, because I had been making small changes, I had a friend who was doing a challenge, and I think it was a 14-day challenge of vegetarian eating. And I said, yeah, sure, I'll do it with you. I'm already not eating all of these things. And he didn't stick with it, and I stuck with it. And all this time later, I'm still chugging along.
That's wild.
But at that time, it was a challenge. I didn't think anything of it. And yeah. And then I started dating someone who was a vegetarian shortly after that. And it became easy because you had someone to share in it with you. And then it became even easier when I joined my veg club on my community college, because I met like-minded people who had similar living situations. A lot of us didn't have much money. A lot of us were very connected to our cultural foods. And we were the same age. We had limited cooking experience, limited kitchen tools. We shared a lot of the obstacles, and to have support from other peers made it so much easier. And what the beautiful thing about that is that at that time, 16 years ago, the resources available were much more limited than they are today. Like now we have your podcast, we have Instagram, we have Facebook groups, all kinds of different communities. There's someone for every type of lifestyle. So if you have kids, you can follow this person with kids. If you have a spouse who eats meat, you can follow this person who shares information about that. And I look to see what is available and am constantly in awe that we are at this place of abundance of resources. And it's really beautiful.
Yeah, I completely agree. We talk a lot about how it is such a cool time to be alive with the plant-based community, because it is just blowing up. And it's so cool to see all of these resources out there. People like yourself who are, this is your job, is providing content and resources and education for people who are looking to go plant-based, especially if they're on a tight budget, which I'm excited to talk more about that. But it is, I just think it's so neat to see even just the plant-based, just the options. And like you said, 16 years ago, I mean, the options were slim to what they are now.
That's the truth.
Yeah.
Yes. I remember the vegan cheese area specifically was non-existent. And maybe in 2009 or something like that, Daya came on the scene, but you could only buy it in 5-pound bags in San Francisco, which is about an hour and a half from me. So my friends and I would take turns going, and then you'd split it amongst your friends and you'd freeze it so that it didn't go bad. And it was such a big task. And now you go to the grocery store and there are 15 options to choose from right there for you.
Yes. There are so many options. I did not know that. That's really, I mean, what a cool time to kind of be on the forefront of that with the vegan cheese scene starting to like, well, now it's like you said, it's everywhere, but to kind of be on the, the beginning of that journey.
It was very cool. I remember feeling like, whoa, this is the best thing ever. Even though you had to drive, spend a bunch of money, split it up with your friends, freeze it. It was all worth it.
Yes, absolutely. How was that transition to veganism for you? I mean, you found that community, which we do talk a lot about how that is, that can be a really pivotal part of your journey, is just being surrounded, like you said, by like-minded people who support and encourage you, especially when you are vegan, because it can feel really isolating when you're not surrounded by people who support that. So how was that for you? How did that kind of maybe change the trajectory of your own journey?
Well, it helped me learn how to cook. I had these potlucks with my friends, and sometimes they were everybody brings a prepared dish, but a lot of times it was where people brought ingredients that I told them to bring, and we would share in the labor as well of making a meal. So I'd go to the library or on VegWeb and print out a recipe and then divvy up all of the ingredients. So everyone's spending like $3 for the meal. And we would do like a big salad and a one pot dish, whether that's a big chili or a soup, and then a dessert. And we'd share in the labor, bond with each other, and learn how to cook. And it also gave me the freedom and flexibility to play with my food and to learn the different spice combinations that work well, because sometimes you're looking at a recipe and it's expensive. Some ingredient costs $6 to buy, and you're like, oh, well, that's not in my budget. Yeah. But will this thing work instead? Or can I use spinach instead of kale because that's on sale? And I did a lot of that at that time, and it helped me build confidence in the kitchen. And it actually has influenced my style of cooking. So if you have any of my books, Plant Based on a Budget, Quick and Easy is the latest one. If you have them, there is a space for three things. There's the basic recipe. Then I include a lot of optional additions. So if you have more of a budget and you want more complex flavors, you can add these things in. And then there's also just lines, and it says my tips on them. And I want people to write in the things that they added or swapped or changed to fit their family's needs, because that's how I learned how to cook. My old cookbooks, I have one in particular. It's The Joy of Vegan Baking by Colleen Petrigadreau. I have scribbled all over, like the pages are falling out. There's food splattered on all of them. And I've changed her recipes based on ingredients that I had on hand and just added all my notes. And I want that for my cookbooks as well.
What a great idea. I've never heard of anyone putting, I'm sure it exists, but never heard of anyone putting notes in there before where you can kind of just jot down your own little things that maybe you changed or the way that you like to make it.
Thank you.
Yeah. I feel like cookbooks are a wonderful tool, but by no means do you have to follow the recipe exactly. And I think that's nice that you allowed for some flexibility. Like, you know, if you kind of want to add a few things to it, you can do that. Or if you want to take your own notes and adjust a little bit, you can also do that.
Yes, I know that sometimes things can feel bland when you're not adding in a lot of spices, but when you're on a tight budget or if you're just budget conscious and maybe you're saving for a trip to Mexico, you are more thoughtful about every dollar that you're spending on your meals. Yeah. And so I want to allow that flexibility. Start with something really simple that will taste good. And if you have it within your budget, or maybe you have these things on hand already, you can add them in and know that it'll enhance the flavor.
Yep. Yep. Absolutely. So is it a common assumption, like when people see what you do online, are they like, oh, Tony, you must have like always cooked you must have always been so talented or passionate about cooking? Or is that like far from the truth? What do you say to that?
I am not a lover of cooking. And I think that that's a big misconception. I think of it as a means to an end. I love to eat. I love to taste food, but the labor of it all is something that I want to get in and out of.
Yes.
And so that's actually how I feel, especially right now, where I do feel a little bit busy. I'm married now and I want to hang out with my husband. I have a dog. I want to walk my dog. I want to spend more time with my parents. The older I get, I just really appreciate the people in my life and want to spend quality time with them. And so I'm looking for ways to stay nourished and to feel good and to make sure that I'm feeding my loved ones healthy, delicious food, but without spending so much time in the kitchen. And with the time I'm spending in the kitchen, making sure that it's as efficient as possible so that I can get in and out, or I can make my next cooking experience much easier because I've maybe chopped two onions, one that I'm using in this meal and then one I can use in the next meal.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I've actually heard you talk about that before. This was a long time ago. And I do that with my tofu scrambles because I'll usually make one. I'll prep one for 1 week and then obviously the next week. But I'll chop up my peppers and my onions. Double it and then freeze half of it and save it for the next week.
I love that. I also freeze a lot of things too. I know that you can buy them frozen, but I like to prep my own, and I also grow a lot of food in the summers. I live in a place where it's very easy to grow food here in Northern California. But I think it's especially good if you're really super busy and you're not going to get to your produce at a time that you mean to.
Yes.
Like before a trip or before or after. After a trip, I just got back from a trip and I didn't have any fresh produce, but I was so glad that I had some chopped produce for the day we came back so that I could throw together a stir fry.
Yeah. Yep. Something really simple and that's quick and easy. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So with that too, plant-based on a budget, which is your like main Instagram account, which is an incredible resource for anyone listening. I highly recommend checking it out if you don't already follow Tony and plant-based on a budget. But how did that come about? Because I know it's been about, like you said, 11 years now. I mean, how did you go from being vegetarian to vegan to all of a sudden I'm going to create this platform that I know, especially in the past 5 or so years, has just really taken off?
Oh, I can't believe how long it's been. First of all, like even hearing you say 11 years, I'm like, what? It's a long time.
Yeah.
Okay. So at the beginning of it all, the inspiring motivator was my family and how people were suffering pretty severely from diet-related issues like type 2 diabetes and heart disease. And it was fatal for several of my family members. And it can feel really overwhelming to not to not know what to do. And around that time, I was thriving on a plant-based diet. I felt good and I was living under the poverty line. And so I wanted to show that you didn't have to go to fancier grocery store or like a natural foods specific store, but you could continue shopping at Dollar Tree or Walmart. And I started creating recipes first. That's where I started. But after getting to know my audience, asking what they needed from me, I found that what they needed was meal planning so that they could learn how to use all of the ingredients in a week and how to schedule out their meals and time in the kitchen.
Yeah.
Not everybody loves that style, but if you are on a tight budget, I created my first meal plans, which have changed with inflation, but originally it was $100 worth of food. So for the month. I said $25 per week per person. And if you're doing two, you can keep that even lower because you're splitting the food, and sometimes it doesn't even out and it makes it much cheaper. Now I say it's about $35 a week. So you're adding an additional $10 per week, but still it is cheaper than what a lot of people are currently spending on food. And I have done this at different grocery stores at different places in the country. And I also have my business partner, Michelle Kane. She did it eating only organic and all from Whole Foods and only spent $10 more than me. So you would be looking at $45 instead of the $35.
Wow.
You are sticking to Whole Foods and you're going to have to put in some work to cook brown rice, to cook your beans. But if you do have a bigger budget, you can take shortcuts with things like no sodium canned beans, or you can buy frozen rice if you wanted to, or you can make a big batch and freeze it for months to come. So there are lots of different options. And in my new cookbook, I show the different ways you can meal plan, whether that's freezer friendly meals, one pot meals, sheet pan meals, or my personal favorite, which are the mix and match bowls, where really you only have to cook one grain and maybe a protein, or if you wanted to do a big grain and use your canned beans or some tofu, baked tofu, those are also options as well.
So many great tips. And I think you're right, or spot on really, in saying that if you do have a limited budget, that the meal planning piece can make a significant difference in driving down that grocery bill. Because like you said too, it also, a lot of food ends up not going to waste, especially if you're kind of being, if you're being diligent with your meal planning and following through during the week, that can be a big money saver.
Yes. And it also cuts down on impulsive purchases. I know that when I'm hungry, I just make decisions that are not in line with what I want for myself. Yep. And I also get really cranky. And people are just like, you need to just go get a sandwich, go buy a sandwich, go buy a burrito. And so I have to remind myself that it's good to carry snacks. It's good to have some ideas. So even if you're not meal planning, just think ahead about what you can make with what you have at home. Maybe you didn't do any prepping, but you know that you have some noodles, you know that you have some frozen veggies, and you know that you have some marinara sauce, and you know you have a can of cannellini beans. That's something that'll take you 15 minutes to throw together at home, and you don't have to make that detour to a restaurant.
Yep. I've been there. I know exactly what you're talking about. that hangry place is never a good place to be. So
no.
Yep. Are there any other things that maybe you utilize or that you teach your audience to utilize, especially if we're working with a limited budget and maybe we are meal planning, but is there anything else that you kind of recommend to save some money, especially?
I'll start with the mindset of being okay saving money, putting something back if it's not within your budget, asking the cashier to double check the sale price that didn't get rung up the way you expected it. And I know it can feel embarrassing, and maybe the line of people behind you are all tapping their feet. But my dad always said, they don't pay your bills. So If you are on a tight budget, just channel your George Okamoto and have him in your ear saying they don't pay your bills and you're never going to see them again. So it's not that big of a deal. And it can have long-term benefits for you and your family to save those extra dollars every single time you go to the grocery store. Yep. And so getting in that mindset, being okay with using your coupons. I use an app for coupons. I also use rebate apps. That's a place to start. Then once you're in that place, go and take inventory of what you have. Make sure you're using what you have first when you're developing your meal plan. You don't want to go buy additional ingredients that you don't need and that you're probably not going to use. And then create meals that are going to complement each other and use the same ingredients. You don't have to use all the same, but it'll prevent you from using half of the onion in this recipe and half of the onion going to waste. Use the same onion if you have half left in another thing. So a pasta and a soup or something like that. And once you create your meal plan and you go to the store, whew, that is a whole other experience. Yes. And you are going to want to stay the course. There's going to be a lot of distractions when you get there and beautiful, bright colors. And the marketing is designed to get you to spend more than you need to. Mm-hmm. Once you get there, stay the course, pay attention to your list, try not to be distracted. Understand that a lot of what is marketed as a sale is paid placement, and they're wanting you to buy that. Go to the aisle of the thing that you need and check for the cheapest price. Look for price per ounce and pay attention. You'll see that what you think is the cheapest might not be the cheapest. So a jar that's really small could be the cheapest thing. But if you look at the price per ounce, it might not come out to the cheapest price.
Yeah.
So at the grocery store, pay attention. And even when you're being rung up, I know that I've put down the wrong number for my bulk items and I'll be rung up for something that's more expensive. Oh, yes. So things like that, you can catch them before you leave the store.
Yep. Yeah, that's a great idea. And Tony, I didn't know about the, and I know this happens all the time, the paid placement thing. I mean, I'm sure. Oh, yeah. I mean, it does. I mean, they're so, it just kind of sucks you right in. The nice colors, that tag that says it's on sale, and then you end up buying it and you're like, I didn't need that, or ends up going to waste. And that's not helpful.
The end caps, and then right when you walk in, and even eye level at certain aisles is, it can be paid placement. And so you want to look all the way around, not just what you see right in front of you.
That's really helpful, even just for my own grocery shopping experience. So, because sometimes I can get sucked into those sales. Yep. What do you recommend for people who may not have access, like immediate access to like, oh, maybe a Walmart isn't 10 minutes down the street. Maybe it's a little bit further, like you driving to San Francisco to get vegan cheese. What are some tips that you typically recommend for someone who maybe has to drive a little bit further to go to a grocery store?
I recommend, again, having a plan once you get there and knowing what you're going to need and what you can buy that's going to last you the month. Say you only go to the grocery store there once a month. For me, I have two grocery stores. One is right next to me. I can buy my produce there, but it's more expensive. And then the other place is about 20 to 30 minutes, and it's a much cheaper place that has bulk items. It's a warehouse style grocery store. And when I say bulk, I don't mean big bags. I mean, you can get little bags of only what you need to. So they're like the downpour bulk bins. It's so much cheaper. But when I go there, I buy my lentils and my dried beans, my brown rice. I buy a lot of frozen produce so that I can rely on it in case I don't get to the grocery store, or in the winter, I don't grow my own produce. So I rely on those quick things that last for a long time and keep those stocked in my freezer and pantry.
Yeah. Yep. That's a great idea. And what's your response to, because I know that a lot of people think eating plant-based is expensive, and by all means, it can be if you are buying certain things, certain ingredients, but what is sort of your response to that when it's like, oh, I can never go plant-based because it's so expensive?
I would suggest that I give them my free meal plans that show them how they can eat for $35 a week. I have done the work for people. Yeah. I have put a lot of time and energy helping millions of people for the past decade. And I will say, having developed the meal plans myself, it is frustrating to go to the grocery store and take in, at the time, my $25 in cash and try not to go above that for 7 days of food. Yeah. So I totally get it. It is overwhelming. It feels like an impossible task. However, I, again, have done the work, and you can print them out, take the grocery list to the grocery store, check everything off. They're free. And I show you that you can, even if you're taking shortcuts with canned beans instead of making your own beans, or making some choices to save more time than money, you can still stay on a very slim budget.
Yes. Yeah. And those meal plans, are they on your website? Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. And we'll link that below and everything, so people can access those really easily.
Cool. Yeah. The first one is the one I recommend. It's the week one person. It's my favorite meal plan, and they're all very customizable.
Okay. Yep. Nice. Love that. Okay. So I definitely want to talk about your cookbook, Tony, because it comes out March 7th. So your cookbook is called Plant-Based on a Budget, Quick and Easy. And from what I understand, it has over 100 recipes, and there are, yes. Okay. So for those of you who are watching on YouTube, Tony's holding up her cookbook, and it is stunning. I already want to eat that bowl that's on the front page. What cookbook is this for you?
This is my fourth cookbook.
Your fourth cookbook. Okay. So how was this one?
This one's my favorite. When I wrote my first cookbook, I didn't really have a choice in anything. I was approached by a publisher. They had done everything for me. They mostly wanted me to create the recipes and put my name on it, but I had no say in it. The second book was Plant-Based on a Budget. This is a follow-up to that one. I did not have any money myself, and I was funding it. I went through a publisher, but I didn't take an advance. So it was so DIY. I threw it together. If you look at it, it is very straightforward. I had a friend move in with me for 5 days to do the photos. I cooked, I cleaned, as I was just pumping 100 recipes out for her to photograph. Oh, and it was a lot of work, but it was something I could be really proud of. Like, there was nothing, and then there was a book, and I got to choose everything about it. And my publisher was so flexible and supportive with me taking what was in my brain and laying it out, because they understood that I knew best what would serve my audience well.
Yeah.
The next book was a Friendly Vegan Cookbook. That is more of a food sharing cookbook. It's all about vegan experiences with people who don't, or dining experiences with people who don't eat plant-based or even vegetarian. Mm-hmm. And I co-authored that with my business partner, Michelle Kane, and she's my dear friend as well. And then this one, I have an amazing person on my staff who does all the food photography. So working with him and knowing how far he came when he started working with me, he had never taken a food photo ever. Wow. He was a friend of my husband's, and he has a really beautiful story. His family is from Peru. They had lost everything. They came here with nothing, lived in a room, and all of his siblings have now gone on to have a fantastic college education and are either with citizens or on their path to citizenship. And I'm so proud of him and how far he's come. And he did an excellent job making my cookbook. Every recipe has a photo, and it makes you want to eat it.
Yes.
And I'm so proud of him. He was a landscape photographer beforehand. So I don't know if anyone's ever tried to take a photo of food, but it's very hard to make it look appetizing.
Yes. You have to style it and like, oh my goodness. Exactly. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He did all the food styling and the photography. And then I have had a lot of other help too. I had some great editors, including one from Veg News, who helped me make it sound very appetizing. I'm such an academic writer, and so she made it sound more interesting. And I feel so supported on this book, and I'm really proud of how it came out.
Yeah. And it sounds like, I mean, you've been working on it for a couple years now.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. Each book takes about 2 years to write, from when you develop the concept to when it's published. It's about 2 years. Some people take a little bit longer and some people take less time, but okay. Not by much.
Sure. Yeah. Well, congratulations. I mean, that's such a huge accomplishment. Yes.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And thank you for allowing me to share it with your audience. I'm
absolutely.
So grateful.
Yes. Where are some of the best places that people can either pre-order it or order the book?
I'm all about supporting independent bookstores. So if you can go to your local bookstore, show them some love, but it's also available everywhere else. You can find all the places at plantbasedonabudgetcookbook.com. And I feel so grateful.
Yes, I think that's so exciting. Well, congratulations again. And I did want to share a fun fact because you were in, I don't know if anyone knows this, you were in What the Health, which is a very popular plant-based documentary. And that's really what kickstarted people becoming really aware of your meal plans. Is that right? That people got really excited.
Yes, I went walking through the grocery store with Kip. And I remember they show this in the documentary, but he brought only cash with him, and we did the $25. Actually, that week one mentioned earlier, we did that meal plan, and he goes to the grocery store and there's a ton of food, and he's like, no way this is going to happen. And the person ringing him up was like, I don't know. And he's like continuing to ring up, and it's like $20 total. And the person was like, what? How is this possible? So I was very proud.
Yes. Yep. Absolutely. I think that really was life-changing for a lot of people to see that.
I think I got a lot of attention from it because it showed the practical application of the concept that was being discussed. We learned so much from that documentary, but then what do you do now? You want to make a change are not sure of the next step. So I was able to assist people on their journeys as they took their initial steps into eating more plant-based, whether or not they ever became vegetarians or whether they became full-on vegans forever. I got to be a step in that direction, and I'm still connected with people I met at that time.
Wow, that's so neat. Because that documentary came out, was it 2017?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Yeah. It's been a little while. Wow, that's so awesome. Well, Tony, thank you so much for coming on the show, sharing about your cookbook, which all those links are below if you want to check it out, purchase it. And then also her website with the meal plans and everything is there as well. So Tony, thank you again for coming on and just sharing your story and everything else.
Thank you. I appreciate it so much. Thank you for all the good work you do. And I'll talk to you soon.
All right, sounds good.
Thank you so much for listening to the Plant Centered and Thriving podcast today. If you found this episode inspiring, please share it with a friend or post it on social media and tag me so I can personally say thank you. Until next time, keep thriving.